Welcome to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Season 3, Episode 19, also Episode 91. I am Rob, and with me is someone who is about to announce his E3 presentation, Hugh.
That's right. I got lots of exciting stuff this time. I got a new console I'm making. It's based on blockchain, and it also does Bitcoin mining in the background.
Nice.
Yeah. Now I could only get a couple like really exclusive publishers like Edge Games to produce stuff for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am excited for E3, but I don't know if it's a necessary thing anymore.
Yeah. Well, you think we're going to get like the Switch Pro 2 or whatever it's called? Switch 2 Scalpers Edition, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah. I don't know. They didn't announce the Switch Lite until, well, it was pretty much released. You know, they would deny its existence until they announced it. So,
yeah,
who knows? There's a chance.
And the Switch Lite really wasn't hard to get. Like, I just went on Amazon when it was announced and ordered it. Mm-hmm. I ordered two of them because I got one from one of my kids, too. Mm. So, at least that launch went well. I'm wondering, the Switch Pro seems like it's going to be a scalping problem is my guess, because it's viewed as an upgrade. Like the Switch Lite is maybe viewed as a downgrade on the Switch. Mm-hmm. But this is like the next gen, whatever. What is it? 4K? Is that a thing?
I don't know what they're going to do to it. I hope they give it a really dumb name, like the new mm-hmm. Switch, like when they did the new 3DS.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I bought, even though there's really no point in owning one.
Well, if you actually use the 3D part, it has better eye tracking. That was really the only real thing.
I always turn 3D off in every 3D game.
Yeah, same here. I didn't know I would do that till I started getting headaches. But what's been going on?
I have nothing going on this week. Absolutely nothing. I really haven't been playing much. I'm sorry to report that. But you've had some stuff going on.
I guess. I beat Immortals, and I give that game a B+, I guess. It's pretty good. I enjoyed every minute of it. I'll probably do some DLC eventually. If you don't like cheesy humor and kind of some campy characters, this isn't the game for you. That's kind of its point, but I really liked it. And I'm waiting for a few games I pre-ordered to come in, I think, this week or next week. So I have a VR system that I've never used that I actually own some Star Wars games for. So okay. I figure, why not actually give that a whirl? So other than that, something that's not in our news is the Atari VCS is actually released to the public. It's not just a Kickstarter people anymore, so you could buy that for $300 if you want to burn some money. But I got mine in I think December, and I have not opened it up yet.
So I predict that system will not be scalped.
No, not at all. So,
if I go to shopping, if I go to Google Shopping, well, there are people attempting to scalp their Kickstarter versions. I see them on eBay right now.
That's stupid. Or
one person is asking $550. Mm-hmm. Another person is asking $418. But you're saying I'm just going to be able to walk into Walmart and purchase this soon.
Yeah, but I think like Walmart, Target, and GameStop, something like that. And yeah, you know what? It's $300 is a big ask. You know, I think you could get like the cheaper of the Xbox, the newer Xbox systems for that, which can mm-hmm. also have RetroArch installed on it.
Yeah, and it also has games, right?
Exactly, yeah. So this, you can install Linux, you can install Ubuntu, you can put more memory, I think up to 32 gig, you can put an SSD or a M.2 drive in there. And so you could really kind of, you know, upgrade it and make it into a cool-looking emulator machine or an actual kind of desktop machine, but you could also kind of do that with a Raspberry Pi. You know what I mean? So,
right.
And save yourself $150.
Right, or you can buy collections of Atari games for like $9.
Yeah, on your consoles. Yeah, on your Switch or a Steam machine or something. Yeah, so don't know if I will actually open that up. I don't know. So
well, I was gonna say you have about a 2 week period now before like the value of your system drops a lot, right? Like before these are in stores, maybe there's a chance you can eBay it. Again, because the bidder, if you're selling it to a bidder who doesn't have Google News or whatever, you know, who doesn't know that it's going to be in stores soon, that's really your only opportunity at this point.
Yeah.
Because once you can just walk in and buy one in the store, it's now a sealed system is now $300. It's not, you know, worth more than that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think that ship has sailed. I don't know. That'd be a lot of work, so ever. But we have some fun news items this week.
Yeah, this is new. This like was just published, you said?
Yeah, a day or two ago. Not today, but yeah.
Well, that's new for us.
Yeah.
Taito announces mini arcade cabinet with rotating screen and trackball. Trackball's kind of intriguing.
Yeah, so if this is an Egret 2 mini machine. So for our listeners that don't know what that is, that's one of those sit-down Japanese arcade cabinets that, you know, you would see people play like Street Fighter 3 or, you know, some top-down, you know, Bola Hell games on. And in those, yeah, they had CRTs built into them, but they were pretty shallow CRTs. And you could actually pull the CRT straight out and rotate it 90 degrees and push it back in. It was built to do that. So you could play your vertical games on the same machine. And this does that. It looks really cool. This might be something I actually pick up.
Yeah, the price is a little... Because, okay, there's like a base unit, and then if you want the other controllers, like the trackball or the paddle, like to play Arkanoid, like... Each of those cost about the same as buying the entire system again. So they're offering a bundle that includes everything for $450.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, like the base cabinet is 170, but if the base cabinet came with everything they talk about, it's not terrible, but yeah, it's base cabinet 170. But the expansion controller 110, arcade stick 80, gamepad 30.
That's kind of insane. And it has a TV out, which is kind of cool, but that kind of defeats the purpose of having a screen that flips. But not bad games, though. Not a bad game list.
See, we've got some news about a Project 64 update, where they fixed bugs in a few games, like Donkey Kong 64 and the... What I've never played, Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine. Is that any good?
I have heard good things about it. It's on my list of games I would like in Game Club, but I want to wait until I can spend some time with it. Yeah, and they're already talking about the next version of Project 64. So yeah, this has been around for 20 years. Wow. What else do we have here?
That's a good question. Oh, yeah, this one it's from Hackaday. This is one I spotted, which is what NES development looks like on the Apple II. And this is about a dev kit for the NES that was on the Apple II, because you know what? That was probably a real configuration people may have used back in the day.
I think this is my favorite article of the week. The picture alone in this article is worth it.
Yeah. Well, the setup is this, you know, the person put this together, like they have the setup with the floppy disk and like the ROM, whatever it is, the thing that actually writes the game to a ROM chip, to an EEPROM that then you put into a dev cart.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to program the assembly on Apple II on a floppy. Then you compile it to, with Merlin to, you know, NES, and then use the expansion card in the Apple II that goes to the EEPROM writer, which writes the ROMs, which you put on a cart, which you put in your Nintendo to test out.
Yeah.
Different times.
Yeah, I mean, I assume most developers did not use this configuration, but again, I wouldn't rule it out completely. I mean,
in 1986, maybe.
I mean, especially if you were a company that had Apple II games that you wanted to port to the NES.
Good point. Yeah.
Right. So, like, I don't know, Bard's Tale, maybe. I don't. I'm just making that up off the top of my head. Right.
But, I mean, doing all this on a, what would be the alternative? You know, DOS. It wouldn't be too much different.
Wouldn't be. Yeah. No. No. The experience wouldn't be different on, you know, whatever the they had in Japan. The probably the Sharp whatever eating. Someone's gonna. I don't remember the name off the top of my head. I apologize. But I'm thinking of, like, you know, they had 6502 PCs in Japan that were probably, you know, the dominant system for developing NES games, like the MSX is what I was thinking of, I guess. Like, I assume those were the dominant things. Like, it's sort of weird if you download, like, old console SDKs, like some of them have leaked to the internet. It's kind of weird to see, like, how many systems are include dev kits for, like, older operating systems than you'd expect. Right. Like, the PlayStation dev kit was for DOS, and then later they had a Windows 95 version. But, like, the N64 dev kit, they have, like, a Next Step version in there. No, I'm serious. Now, I have a boxed copy of Next Step. I don't know why, but I have one. So I could set up, like, you know, the whole Nintendo 64 dev kit on Next Step if I don't know, retired young, maybe. I don't know. I
exactly. Don't know why I would try that. Yeah. Yeah, Nintendo 64 dev is funny because, yeah, I have a STI-02 machine that I keep meaning to install the N64 dev kit on it. But you could also do, what, OS2 for Nintendo 64 or something?
Oh, right. Yeah, there is an OS2 version in there.
That is so random.
Which until Windows 95 came out, that was not completely far-fetched. I mean, OS2... I mean, going to build OS2 still has, like, a community because there's a lot of like cash registers and other devices that run on OS2. Yeah. Like it's just not a dead system at all. I mean, it is a dead system, but it's really, like, specialized functions.
Yeah, that is so strange. That is funny. What next? Oh yeah, Sega is probably rebooting Crazy Taxi, Jet Set Radio, and Space Channel 5.
Right, these are all games they ported to Android already, so I don't know how much of a reboot this is.
Yeah, we'll see if they, like, completely redo them or something, but, I mean, they all seem pretty modern to me still, so I don't know if a reboot is really necessary.
Yeah, these are all well over 20 years old.
I know, but they still feel new to me. I don't feel like any of these need, like, a Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. I mean, like I said, you can download these on Android and they're enhanced a little bit. It's probably just, you know, evolving that.
Yeah, I mean, they point out, like, House of Dead, you know, that's definitely happening. So, you know, maybe in Panzer Dragoon that did happen. So, hey, why not? Why not? Oh, on the ChozoProject.com, a nice little write-up on practical retro game collecting in 2021. So it's just a lot of tips from a collector and gamer on how you can collect and not go broke and ruin your family's lives doing it. So a lot of it might seem obvious, but maybe not to everyone. Things like, why don't you try these games out on the Switch or Steam before buying them? Make sure you actually want to play them and don't collect just to put something on a shelf.
Right. Or instead of, like, finding Ocarina of Time on Nintendo 64, just buy the 3DS remake.
Yeah. Which
I think you can buy on Amazon for $30 right now.
Yeah. And it's arguably better.
Well, it's definitely better. Yeah.
Yeah, so nice little write-up there. Something I didn't get all the way through, making Game Boy games in 2021 with Quest Arrest developer John Rue. So this is a nice, looks like a Q&A with John Rue. He he develops Game Boy games, and he also develops some NES and Genesis games coming out soon. Yeah, seems like a pretty cool guy.
Heroes of Might and Magic 2 fans are building it in a better engine, or building it a better engine. Oh, so this is one of these projects where you're basically creating a game engine to play a game that already exists, like Scum VM.
But here, exactly.
Yeah, this is a group. They have a Patreon and all that stuff that they're doing to write a new engine for this game. You have to bring your own files. Although I think they include the files for the demo version of the game.
And they also have HD mods, unofficial expansion packs, improved AI, stuff like that. So I was never really a big fan of this game. Nothing against it. It just didn't really grab me.
Yeah, I've never really been into the Might and Magic games.
I think this next one will kind of get a divided crowd on it. J.J. Abrams confirms that the film adaptation of Portal is still in active development. Right. I don't know. I liked Sonic. I liked Detective Pikachu. So, hey, why not a Portal movie?
I don't know what Portal is about, but
I only played the first one, and I heard you actually get more story in the second one, so I'm kind of with you.
Yeah, never played it. It involves portals somehow, right?
Yes, yes. And it has a 2600, or was it Apple II? I forget. Downgrade, I guess. Another game I really never played. You ever play Picross?
Yeah, a while ago. I never got into it too heavily, though.
Okay, yeah, I just never really thought about getting into it. But on the Switch, there's a Mega Drive, well, I guess Genesis, and Master System Edition coming out soon. And if you click on the link, there's a little trailer for it. So there you go for our Picross fans. Probably the biggest news of the week, the founders of Sierra Online, Ken and Roberta Williams, are creating a new game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe they don't own Sierra in any capacity anymore.
Oh, no, they got the hell out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, curious to see what they do. I mean, it's sort of about, you see the, old days former programmers coming back in. There's been a few other projects like this, and some of them are okay, and others, they just, they have maybe lost touch with what people want to play these days. So it'll be interesting. I heard an interview with Ken Williams on another podcast a while ago, and I mean, he seems incredibly smart, so I don't necessarily expect that. I'm just sort of curious if they make something that is more like, an older, game from back in the early days, and whether or not gamers would actually react well to that.
Yeah, yeah. I really wonder what it would be. I hope something completely different and not just a rehash of one of their old titles. Yeah. Specifically, I mean, Leisure Suit Larry. We don't need any more.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to. But they don't own any of that IP, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it kind of doesn't matter. What was I thinking of? Thimbleweed Park is like one example. Like that was, some old school developers doing a comeback, and the game, it was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So it definitely can be done. I mean, to be kind of blunt, like if there's an article that like Nolan Bushnell was getting back into game development, I would just be like, yeah, that's not going to work out.
He always talks about there's someone else that I forget who it was. It's like, oh yeah, I'm back on the board of a game developing company. It's like, why? Because they're more businessmen than anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nolan Bushnell always strikes me as more of like an idea guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I think him trying to make a modern game would probably not go well, is my guess.
Yeah.
I think there'd be a lot of like bravado about it, but the game itself would not be very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's so reminiscent of the 90s when FMV was coming out and all these people are saying like, well, we think we have the future of video games right here. And it was, I think 100% of the time, a total dud. Mm-hmm. So it feels like that feeling is rehashed again.
We have a couple things that we're going to group together here. So we got two articles about lost and found things. One of them is about recovering data from floppy disks with an oscilloscope. And another is about a lost arcade game preserved in MAME for the first time.
This first one is a little bit over my head. I understand pretty much everything up to the oscilloscope part.
Yeah. So this is actually from a blog about like computer security and hacking. And it's, you know, again, everything like on a floppy disk is analog data. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's similar. We did an article. We talked about an article a few weeks ago about like ripping the audio from data disks, right? Into like a wave.
From cassette.
Yeah. And this is a very similar concept where it's essentially ripping the data almost like in waveform to then look for, to try and identify the blocks where there's physical damage to the disk and then repair the data, you know, be able to recover what was originally on the disk. It's kind of a good article. Like if you have some like really, if for some reason you have some really important data on like a 5¼-inch floppy, like, I don't know, the nuclear launch codes or something, mm-hmm. Which I assume are on a 5¼-inch disk.
Yeah.
this would be useful for you if you had some like extreme data recovery thing. This is why, like when I get rid of like old hard drives, like I remove the platters and whack them with a hammer.
Yeah. I don't blame you. Yeah.
You know, like the last hard drive, like whenever I get a new hard drive, I throw out my oldest hard drive. Mm-hmm. I have like a hard drive box with like my past five drives. And I mean, I actually set those on fire this time.
I don't blame you at all.
This article is somewhat of an inspiration for that. Like, look what these guys can do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny that they're actually using Audacity in this. Like you can actually see them doing it. Cause yeah, it's digital data, but it still looks like a waveform because the magnetism goes up and down. It's not just like an actual, like straight up, you know, spike. So.
And this other article is about a game called Mrs. Dynamite, which I've never heard of.
Yeah. Cause it never got out of the testing phase, but it was in a few test markets and someone finally dumped the ROMs. And I watched the video of the guy playing this. It looks pretty fun. It's like they call it a Pac-Man like, but it's really a mix between Pac-Man and Bomberman. It looks like a pretty good game. Who did this? I think it was Universal. The publisher was Universal. So, looked like there was some money behind it, but kind of cool to see this, come out of nowhere.
Let's see. And then we got a couple articles, that really are about like the Neo Geo turning 30 ultimately. Mm-hmm. One is a oral history of the Neo Geo and the other is just a kind of tribute to the Neo Geo on its 30th birthday. I did not read either of these because I'm bad.
I definitely recommend them both. The first one is When the Arcade Came Home, a short oral history of Neo Geo. And it has some quotes and kind of almost in an interview style of employees from SNK back in the day. I thought that was fantastic. And yeah, the second one is just on PCMag.com. And it's just really, right up about really mostly the Neo Geo MVS, which is the arcade cabinet. Style Neo Geo. So kind of cool. I'm a Neo Geo fan.
A bunch of articles about Amiga. So one is about a new version of Amiga OS for classic Amigas. One is about a repro board for the Amiga 2000. Basically, someone made a PCB clone of the Amiga 2000 board. And the other one, which is kind of a fascinating one, about how the Commodore Amiga was used to power cable TV, specifically the preview stations that, you know, you've probably seen. I mean, before there were cable boxes where you could just like browse the stations. You remember you saw the station. You had the station.
Yeah. It's like the TV Guide Network, pretty much.
Yes. But how that was powered by Amiga. And I don't recall if they have where you can download the code for this. But if you wanted to run this at home, I suppose you can.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I don't know what purpose it would serve. I mean, maybe if you had an old Amiga and you needed to run, I don't know what. I don't know what practical purpose this would have.
I feel like there's a Twitch channel idea somewhere here. We're getting we're close to a great idea. Like,
okay, so it's a schedule of other Twitch streams.
Yeah, and then like, but someone in a hot tub or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess that's a thing on there now, isn't it?
But that would be a great intro, a hot tub joke. But anyway, the Amiga OS 3.2. That's a fun upgrade. I mean, you grew up with an Amiga, right?
Well, I wouldn't say grew up. I had one when I was, you know, a young adult.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, this is, there's a bunch of new features, but yeah, this is meant to run on old Amigas. This is not like an OS that you're supposed to run in VirtualBox or something. I mean, you could, I guess. Actually, can you run Amiga OS in VirtualBox? I've never thought about it really. But this is meant to run on old computers, and it has, you know, better, it has a lot of improvements to help support people who maybe are modding Amigas or using them, like, the ability to work with ADF images directly.
Yeah. It looks like you can run Amiga OS in VirtualBox.
Yeah, wow. I've never really thought to do it because we have emulators, but
yeah, there's really no reason. Okay.
If I still had an Amiga 500, I would definitely install this, but I got rid of it due to space constraints.
Yeah, those are big boxes. And what else do we have?
And then last up, a couple RetroArch notes here. There's just a general article about RetroArch, which I can still not pronounce. We'll be getting more frequent updates. I can't pronounce that either. And support for HD widescreen Super Nintendo games,
which look beautiful. Yeah. I have no idea how that would work. So if
I bet it doesn't work with every game.
So games that are kind of calculating what's coming next on the screen before it hits the 4x3.
No. Well, like I can tell you how the Genesis works. So on the Genesis, there are more tiles, like the screen on the Genesis, there's a certain block that displays, and then there's like 128 pixels to the right and bottom. I guess it depends what your viewport is.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually have like 128 pixels on either side, up, you know, top, bottom, left, right, that you just don't see.
Mm-hmm.
And you can scroll into those without having to load more tiles or calculate anything.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you have a screen that's a little bit bigger than the... I have a picture of this on my website. So there's a screen internally in the Genesis that's a little bit bigger than what's actually, it's projecting to the TV, and you can kind of move around there without reloading tiles or figuring out where the rest of the data is. So I'm assuming the Super Nintendo does something like that too. So games that maybe are using that space for some other purpose, you know, storing junk in there, or that don't scroll, like you'll just see garbage tiles probably.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yep, people are smarter than me. Like, I guess that's news, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
We got some game club. Mine's up there first, so I guess I'll just dive into it. So, I did Blaster Master. This is I consider this a summertime game for me. I got it in the summertime. I played it and I beat it, actually quite young in the summertime. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where I didn't have many Nintendo games, and I was really excited to get this one because it just has beautiful box art. And it turns out it is a fantastic game. It just doesn't have save states or anything or passwords. So it's considered difficult to beat. And you have nothing else to do in the summer, so you kind of beat it. But I kind of shared an affinity with it because I kind of grew up in an area where we had like... kind of a creek and a big common area behind the house, or a bunch of frogs back there. Mm-hmm. And this, you're a kid in the summertime, that his frog jumps down a hole and you go down there and there's a tank, and then you go and you have to save your frog Fred and by shooting a bunch of things, I guess. But I don't know. Does this game
like
just
mutates or something? Like,
what's that?
Doesn't he like mutate into some sort of super frog or something?
Something like that, yeah. So this game really spoke to me when I was a kid. And it's funny, one of the only other games I owned at the same time was Fester's Quest, which seemed to share sprites and stuff. You know, they're both Sunsoft. I think they both had the same composer. But anyway, this is a side-scrolling, I guess you would call it, tank platformer. I don't know what you would call it, but most of the time you're in the tank. I guess it could be a Metroidvania too, because the tank gets upgrades that let you, you know, eventually, you know, climb up walls and hover and have missiles and shoot down different doors that you couldn't before. You could hop out of your tank and you're just this little weak guy running around. I was always terrified of getting out of the tank. I would only do it when it forced me to. But when you get out of the tank, sometimes you could go into a doorway, which brings you to a kind of isometric top-down area where you're a bit more powerful as a person not in a tank. Mm-hmm. And that's where you encounter the bosses, which are really creative bosses. And, you know, like, I think there's two different big frogs. There's kind of a blocky boss. And, yeah, just really alien-type looking bosses. You get upgrades as a human as well that get you more powerful and longer throwing grenades and more spread on your pellet shooter. And the Mega Man type cheat works in this, where on some of the bosses, if you throw a grenade on them and hit pause, it'll keep causing damage. So I did not know that when I beat it the first time, though, but it does make it a lot easier. I just love this game. I think it's beautiful. I think that the gameplay is almost flawless. Yeah, the music, or from the second the music starts, it just really hypes you up. It has some modern, I think, prequels to it. Blaster Master Zero and Blaster Master Zero 2. I think I heard Blaster Master Zero 3 is coming out. And it has some horrible sequels. There is a 3D Blaster Master on the PlayStation, which suffers from Doom 64 syndrome, where mm-hmm. it's just too dark and too muddy to really see anything. But that's for a whole other episode. But what do you think of this one?
Well, so one of the prequels, Limited Run Games, just like over the weekend put up for pre-sale. I think it's maybe Zero. I don't remember.
Nice.
So you can go ahead and buy that, I guess. You know, I really haven't played this since the 80s, probably. I think it was a rental. And I knew about that trick of pausing when you bombed an enemy. That must have been in like Nintendo Power or something.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's why I decided to rent the game, because I knew you could do this trick and maybe I thought I could win it over the weekend, I guess. And like overall, I liked it. I mean, it is sort of reminiscent of Metroid. This time around, I just over lunch watched a 25-minute speed run instead, because that was just easier. And it is kind of fun. I mean, like, there's a few little glitches that make the game shorter. I really thought this was a game that would be like broken in 5 minutes. You know, like you would just clip through some wall and suddenly you're at the last boss, and then you do the bomb pause trick.
Yeah,
but no, nothing like that. No, it was you know, seems like they played through a pretty good portion of the game. I mean, there were parts skipped, but I mean, they really went through a lot of it. So yeah, I thought it was a pretty cool game. There was a Genesis. Did you mention the Genesis version?
No, I didn't.
There's a sequel on the Genesis that was a little bit obscure. I remember working in the game store. Like, whenever that came in, people were like surprised to learn that it existed.
I don't even know if I knew that existed. Have you played that one?
Not long. That so long ago that I can't tell you much about it.
But yeah, this is, you know, a 10 out of 10 game for me. I love this one, and like I said, it was vivid memories of for a long time seeing the box art in Toys R Us and thinking like I need this game, and I would mow lawns in the summer until I could buy it.
Yeah.
How about your game?
So, yeah, I played mine a little bit. I did Mr. Deuce Castle. I played it on MAME. I probably have it on a collection here, but I didn't feel like searching for it. It's kind of okay. I think it's a game that if I saw it in the arcade, I probably wouldn't have played. Or I probably did see it in the arcade and didn't play it. And playing it again, I'm like, yeah, It's a little reminiscent of Bubble Bobble. It seemed kind of easy to me. Like, I feel like I could probably play the game for like 30 minutes on one quarter.
So is this a sequel to Mr. Do?
It is, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
I got confused by this too, because there's a lot of things with similar names out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I played was Mr. Do's Castle, where you have like the ladders and there are like these little dinosaur-y guys coming after you when you knock blocks to the floor to like trap them in the floor, or you drop blocks on their head. But the enemies aren't particularly aggressive and are pretty easy to avoid.
So kind of has a Load Runner kind of feel to it.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. There's a 2600 version, but that might just be regular Mr. Do, because it looks like a completely different game.
Yeah. Yeah. I found Mr. Do and Mr. Do's Castle were totally different. And
different games. Yeah. And there's a Super Nintendo game called Mr. Do that I also watched a little video of, and that looks more like you're playing Dig Dug.
Uh-huh.
It feels like a different game entirely, but it might just be that I'm not much of an expert on Mr. Do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the graphics look nice. It's kind of fun. I just, not my thing.
I was just so bad at it that I just bounced right off it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. This game, I was just not good at.
Okay. See, I thought it was really, really easy. Maybe I just picked it up really, really fast. I don't know. I'm not great at skill games anymore, but I thought this was pretty easy.
Yeah, but yeah, I think this is the sequel. So, and when you posted this last time, or, you know, mentioned it for Game Club, I just assumed that, everyone was just always abbreviating Mr. Do, and it's actually Mr. Do's Castle. So,
yeah.
So I definitely learned something this week. But yeah, it's worth checking out. What do you want to do next?
I'm going to stick with the summer arcade theme, and I'm going to go with Cruisin' USA.
And I'm sticking with you, and I'm doing Tubin'.
Tubin', yeah. That is definitely a summer game.
Oh, yeah.
Fun fact, I was not aware that the pastime of Tubin' even existed until I saw this game.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely knew about it. We had friends that had like a cottage on a river. That they tubed on. So if any of our listeners play any of these games or have any retro projects or retro news, or if you want to ask us anything for our Ask Us Anything episode in 9 episodes, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net. Or on Twitter, at RGC Podcast, that Zach runs all that stuff. And I do think for our 100th episode, our Ask Us Anything episode, we will have a giveaway. I am pretty sure Zach offered up his PlayStation Classic Mini, whatever those things are called. I have a AVS, which is a, and it's used, but very slightly used. It's a FPGA NES system. Yeah, you know, we'll pick some of the questions and maybe have some giveaways, and should be a good episode. So please email us, you know, before that. But also, if you have some Ask Us Anything questions, we have a lot of questions already, so it's going to be a fun episode. But yeah, we have some feedback this week.
Yeah, I'll get the first one here from Majors, talking about you being happy that your arcade game still worked after being turned off for a long time. And he's had a few issues with that over the years, that often a recap is needed.
Mm-hmm.
Buzz Bombers, worst game ever. Did I call Buzz Bombers the worst game ever made? I might have. It's one of the worst. It's not the worst game ever made, but it's certainly up there in my opinion. He asked if I was burned by paying the full price of it right before the crash. And the answer is no, I got it for $1 after the crash. And I still feel ripped off. I mean, I was a kid. It was a dollar was a lot back then. My problem with Buzz Bombers is it's not a very good shooting game. Like, as shooting games go on the Intellivision, it's really, really bad. The spray can itself is really slow. It's kind of hard to aim. And then the bees, like, drop. If they get to the ground, they plant flowers, which then cut off the amount of screen you can travel on.
Huh.
So you can get boxed into a very small part of the screen. And when you shoot the bees, they like turn to honeycombs. So it's like this kind of centipede mechanic. So you pretty much have to shoot those. Like you can get yourself boxed in and then not able to shoot any bees because of the honeycombs. It's a really frustrating and terrible game.
Nice.
So I would highly recommend no one ever play Buzz Bombers. Build your own Star Wars arcade cabinet.
Oh, I mentioned that something about its scan lines, but then I corrected myself because it's vector graphics. So he's saying I was probably thinking of him because he would have emailed and corrected us.
Okay, so the part I wanted to get to from his email is that he also visited the abandoned mall arcade that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I drew a blank on the name. It is called Arcade Legacy. I don't know if I've ever been there, but there was apparently he went there once for a game tournament, which is cool.
Hmm.
I said the mall is very, very, very creepy. And he was not aware there was a whole culture of people that like to visit abandoned malls. I don't know if I would call myself that, but if I know of an abandoned mall in the town I'm in, I will go check it out. And he asked if I remembered the pigs on top of the gazebos. And yeah, I think I probably took some pictures of them. It is really surreal walking around like an abandoned mall that otherwise still has like all the store signs. And like there's some minimal amount of upkeep there. Because again, it wasn't like overrun with rats or gangs or, you know, whatever. Right. It was just like a mall where all the people disappeared.
That is so strange.
And they didn't have air conditioning on in summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then a note about last episode, we had a long email from Stanley with some Sega Saturn problems. He has a theory that he says RetroTINK has a device called 2X Mini that takes S video and outputs HDMI, but he doesn't know if the plasma TV has HDMI. I think it did.
I think Stanley mentioned that he tried the RetroTINK.
I think, yeah. But he said he has two older plasmas that only work up to component, but can take RGB over component to display the Saturn. So he would ditch S-Video and go RGB whenever he can, but he doesn't know the setup. That's an option. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I suppose RGB, if you have RGB ports on the TV, I don't know how to do Saturn RGB, but is that what the RetroTINK does?
Well, it does S-Video 2 or RGB 2, but I think, but
okay.
There's got to be a Saturn mod that you could do that too.
So I think if I understand correctly, he's speculating it's some sort of sync issue, which I think is what you said.
Yeah, it's like busy negotiating.
Yeah.
And sort it out, yeah.
And your option was what? Throw it on a fireplace? Throw it in the fireplace and or something? What was it, your option again?
I can't remember. I think I was saying, what? I was thinking a recap or...
No, I don't think that's it. I'm sticking with either some issue with the signal itself that doesn't work. So as for the games, he says he really enjoys the first Mr. Do, but not so much the sequels, Castle and Wild Ride. And that Wild Ride, I only remember the name. I've never seen it. He might try a little bit at the next convention he's going to, which is Colossicon. I don't think I've been to that. I've definitely not been to that. I know I haven't. And then Blaster Master. The no saving really, really hurts. Both emulation and save states, it's fine now. He does have a bad memory of it. When it was new, he was at Toys R Us with a fistful of cash ready to buy the game. He looked at the back of the plastic flap and it reminded him of Zelda. So he initially turned his nose at it and bought Xenophobe instead.
Oh no.
Yeah. Probably not a great mistake unless you really love Xenophobe. Later on at Circuit City, there was a NES demo station with that was running it. And when he tried it, he realized he made a horrible mistake. And then also proposes that there's a drinking game whenever you mention a store that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, that would be definitely every episode.
Toys R Us technically exists. They're still in Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jason writes in and... The game that I couldn't remember the name of was Steel Battalion. That's the game with the giant, for Xbox, with the giant steering wheel and pedals and everything. Steel Battalion. Said there's an old MTV show called True Life from 20 years ago. True Life, I'm a Gamer, he thinks it was called. Where they profiled a house full of single gamers living together. One guy was always playing Steel Battalion. His housemate commented the guy could not even drive stick, but could operate that controller. And as for retro games in odd places, he does not know if this is for sale, but near his house, there's an old independently owned gas station. You know, old style one that has like gas pumps and they don't take credit card. Like the gas pumps that don't have credit card machines in, like really old place. And most of their sales are probably cigarettes and lottery tickets. And behind the counter, in the employee workspace is a boxed Atari 5200.
You got to see if you could buy that thing.
Yeah.
You have to.
Like, has it just been sitting there forever?
Yeah, I mean, if it's new in box, that might be worth something.
Yeah, that thing has got to be so sun-bleached by now. But still, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Matrix and Jason, thank you for those emails. We have some social media questions. One of the questions was, where was the strangest place you found stuff for sale? And obviously Jason just answered one of those, but yeah, I actually have one that almost happened in the, in 1996, I was working at a, kind of guitar and music store called Limelight Music in the Detroit area. And, we would also like fix and build computers out of the back of it, but I was also modding PlayStations out of the back of the store. And I convinced the owner of the store that we might want to get the building next door and open up a video game store. It went as far as me finding like the wholesale distributor for video games and stuff like that. And, you know, sending them paperwork. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was pretty young at this time. I was definitely in my teens. I got it pretty far. It really became so close to me opening up a game store with this guy. Which would have been bad because we would have...
Because you would have failed catastrophically.
And...
Right.
Been modding PlayStations and stuff, which, you know, yeah. not...
Which nowadays will get you like a police raid, apparently. Back then, maybe not. But I think the issue is that... I know if I tried to do something like that when I was that age, the store would stock a lot of games I really liked a lot and not necessarily games that sell really well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I think most of us in our teams are not ready to be businessmen and stuff like that. And yeah. But luckily the guy opened up and I'm doing air quotes internet company and I got to be one of the first employees for that. So probably moved in the right direction for me professionally, but yeah, that's my almost having video games in a strange place story.
I always like when you find video games at the dollar store. It's always fun.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, I see them at Five Below a lot. Dollar store, it's been a while. I mean, like I say all the time, I got pretty much my entire 7-800 collection from a dollar store.
Nice.
And one time I went there, they had a bin of PlayStation controllers. Not Sony branded, of course. They were, you know, I don't know what they were. I did not buy one because they looked too, they didn't even look worth a dollar. They did not look like they even had that much quality behind them.
Wasn't it around the time we started this podcast? I forget the name of the store, but it was kind of like a book and collectible store that randomly had like Sonic 3 for sale on their site for like Black Friday or something.
No, this was a while ago now, but Half Price Books, you're familiar
with that? That was right? It, yeah.
Yeah, in one year in their like Christmas catalog, no, it wasn't Sonic 3. It was Knuckles Chaotix for 32X. They were advertising that they were going to have Knuckles Chaotix in their stores.
For and Black what Friday. Year would this have been? Like 2018 or something?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, yeah. Just it was really absurd, and I was like, I think I have a loose copy of Knuckles Chaotix, and it's not a very good game.
Mm-hmm.
Good soundtrack, really good soundtrack, but the game itself is not very fun. But I just The only time I've done like Black Friday sales recently were like Dollar General when they were selling some of these like, you know, mini classic systems really cheap. Because the Dollar General, who is not a dollar store, their stuff is like all different prices. They would sell like the Fire Core, like for, you know, $20 or $30, some really low price. That's the portable that you can put a Genesis cartridge in or an SD card.
I don't know if I don't know if we've talked about that on this podcast or if I've heard about it.
Okay. Yeah, I have one of those. Well, there's two variants. There's one you can put a cartridge in and one that there's no cartridge slot, but there's an SD slot.
Hmm. Do they work?
Oh yeah. They work wow. Great. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how I did some debugging on one of them. I don't know where I have. Okay. Here's one of them. I know we don't stream this, but like this is one of them right here. Mm-hmm. It's just a Genesis 6-button controller and cartridge slot. So if you want to like go on an airplane and have a Genesis, like basically a Nomad knockoff.
I was going to say for our listeners, it looks like a Nomad meets a Lynx.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the controllers aren't awesome and all that stuff. It has a safety strap for some reason.
in case you're going to Wiimote it.
Yeah, I guess. So, but yeah, you just jam a cartridge in here. It might not work with like virtual racing. I don't know. I haven't tried it. Mm-hmm. The couple carts I put in worked perfectly. So there you go.
That's cool. What were we talking about?
Oh, yeah. So,
social media.
Social media. Someone mentions to us that some PSX games have built in reset. And the ones that do it typically implemented it with the four shoulder buttons. Press all four at the same time. So there you go. That's good to know.
Yeah.
And another person sent us a picture of their crazy setup. When we were talking about the Nintendo, the DS TV tuner being useless. And he has this setup where he is, I'm guessing from the picture, playing games on the Game Gear through the Game Gear TV tuner. But for other systems. So it's an HDMI cable going into an HDMI to SCART. And then I guess this is a SCART to AV out, which then is being plugged into the
antenna.
Game Gear TV tuner, which I didn't realize had an input. And then you could play the game ultimately on the Game Gear.
Wow. We need to know. He needs to email us and tell us why. That's my question.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the Game Gear TV tuner as an accessory is pretty useless now because there's very, very, very few antenna stations that use that old style protocol. I mean, unless you live in like a really big city, you know, one of the like five biggest cities in the US, you probably don't have any stations.
I think by FCC law, those have been used for 5G now. I don't think there's any in America.
So in Chicago, we have two old school antenna stations.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the target demographic is people over 100. I mean, I'll just be blunt. One of them is like QVC. Mm-hmm. It's maybe not QVC, but it's some home shopping network. And the other is, I think, a Catholic station, possibly in Polish.
Nice. Nice.
So if you have no other viewing options, actually, I'm going to Google if these are still up. Hold on. Chicago. Because I think I technically can pick them up.
Because yeah, in Michigan, we have zero.
Yeah. You have zero, I'm sure, in there. I'm going to say like outside of like Chicago, New York, and maybe LA, you know, LA, right? You have almost nothing.
Because that's why they got rid of the analog TV for digital, so they could repurpose that frequency.
Right. But I'm saying like certain low power stations are still allowed.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not arguing whether or not it's crazy. I'm just
so they're gonna tell the population like you can't have 5G because you have the QVC.
Well, I don't know, but see, the thing is, I don't know if they're running on, like, some kind of, I don't know how any of this works, but they might be running on some frequency that isn't used for 5G.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it could be something like that. Or again, they're considered like low power stations, so they aren't like super huge range.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, there are literally like two of those stations in Chicago still. I mean, there were as of some number of months ago. It's been a while since I've like recalibrated my antenna. If you use a digital antenna for some stations, like, you know, every couple of months, you just have to like recalibrate it because reasons.
Well, they're upgrading to the version 3 of digital antenna, which is a lot better for a few reasons, but it also can send you personalized commercials. We won't get into it, but yeah.
So that's terrifying. I really yes. am not a fan of that concept.
No. But it also offers some like pay-per-view and stuff like that over antenna, which is kind of cool.
Hmm.
Anyway, yeah. we should start an antenna podcast.
They literally gave you the converter boxes for free, so there's no reason why you still need
exactly. old
school antenna.
Yeah.
In fact, my last electronics recycling purge, I finally got rid of the free converter box I got years ago. It was for like a TV in the garage or something. You know what I mean? Like, okay.
I was going to say, I actually like digital or antenna TV. There's actually a lot of stuff like Star Trek and MacGyver. And I don't know, there's just a ton of funny stuff in there that I end up watching.
Well, yeah.
Svengoolie.
So like in my game room here where I record, right? I don't have cable, right? Mm-hmm. I have a cable modem that I'm looking at right now, right? But that I'm not watching TV on that. And then I have like the TV in here. And that just have, I just have like a Leaf antenna hooked up to that. And I mostly use it to like put on, because you can get all the football games. You can get all the mm-hmm. NFL games. Sometimes playoff basketball, depending what's on. But then, yeah, you're right. The stations that are like, here's reruns of whatever show we could get the license to.
Yeah, I get sucked into those. And it actually, for the newer stuff, it actually looks better than cable. It's uncompressed 1080p. It looks nice. But, we should really start an antenna podcast.
Yeah, well, again, low power, you can do it. You can set up low power FM stations basically anywhere. Mm-hmm. If your radius isn't more than like, I'm making this number up. Let's say a mile. It's something because there's a couple in this area. People that just run low power FM stations. I assume it's all like political propaganda. I've never really turned
any of them on. Yeah, none of it's retro gaming.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with these low power stations.
But if you run your own FM network, email at retrogameclub.net.
Yeah. Yeah, I would be curious about that. Yeah. Or your favorite antenna stations. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. That's cool. All right. I think that wraps her up.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you.